I think we're all pretty well apprised of the fact that soils, the forests cover a wide expanse of the globe, more than 4 billion hectares. And as such, because of their above ground and below ground carbon storage, they hold more than 50% of the global carbon in terrestrial systems. And they have a major role in the global carbon cycle. And because of that, it has a major role possibly in mitigating some of the increases that we're seeing in climate change. And that's a question that's been out there for quite a while, and we've had some of that parts of that question answered. But we also know that the carbon that's held in the forests could also exacerbate the atmospheric forcing if it gets released to the atmosphere, and this is a great concern. And so we know that a variety of factors affect carbon, the forest productivity, and therefore the stock of carbon, particularly that in soil. And so sort of what I thought were the three goals of our discussion here today was to, how can we maintain the stock of carbon that's out there? How can we protect it, if you will? Secondly, how can we recover carbon that's been lost? And then thirdly, how could we, if possible, sequester additional carbon? All important questions, and I don't think we have the answer to all of these questions, and part of what we're doing today is maybe trying to ask some of those questions and be given some approaches, as Chris suggested. I think we've all seen graphs that look something like this. You know, we have a forest that might be at steady state and has a certain amount of carbon that's stored above ground and below ground, and then at some point a disturbance takes place, whether it's a natural disturbance or the forest gets removed to go into cotton for 50 years. And we see a loss of carbon in a lot of situations, if not, well, in a lot of situations, leave it at that. At some point, we can initiate either replanting or reforestation or some change in management that leads to recovery of some portion of that carbon that was lost. And we can think of at least three scenarios where the carbon is regained either partially, completely, or through some altered management, we can actually lead to additional sequestration, and that would be one of the goals of this notion of sequestering carbon in forests or carbon sequestration. At EPA, we have the mandate to ensure clean air and clean water, and so with that, you know, over the decades of work at EPA, there's been quite a few improvements in air quality and water quality due to managing point sources. One of the things that we've noticed is that the increase in quality is declining, the increases in quality, and it's mainly because our inability to control non-point sources. And so we're looking at ecosystem services as a way of offering potentially better ecosystem protection, and this ties into carbon sequestration. Now, the definition that EPA is using of ecosystem services is that they are the output of ecosystem functions or processes that support, either directly or indirectly, human welfare or well-being, as the Millennium Assessment calls it, or they have potential to do so in the future. And we think of ecosystem services as a way of looking at the whole system instead of just focusing on water quality alone. We're going to try to look at the whole system and how things that we do the system affect water quality. In the Millennium Assessment, as I mentioned a minute ago, they've talked about carbon sequestration as an ecosystem service, mainly from the context of how it plays a role in climate regulation. And they, and therefore, it's a service that's offered for human well-being, because it's helping to, we benefit from a stable climate system. And the Millennium Assessment goes on to recommend carbon sequestration as a step that needs to be taken or promoted. But I guess I would contend, and this is one of the things that we need to discuss, is that if we just look at carbon sequestration as a way of protecting the climate system, we're missing a lot of the other benefits of carbon in the system, in the soil. And I'm going to go through a list. I'm not going to go through all of these, but think about the role of carbon, soil carbon, in each of these settings. And you think about in soil genesis, how carbon plays a key role in soil aggregation, clay mineral formation, the movement of clays and metals within the soil, weathering, cation exchange capacity, and just the protection it offers from raindrop impact. And so, that's in soil genesis. And then the biological functions out there, nutrient source, particularly nitrogen, phosphorus. It's a slow release of those. Energy source for a lot of the soil biology, repository for biodiversity, rooting medium, seed germination. You know, thinking about the water cycle, again, if you're doing a full accounting of what carbon does in the ecosystem, soil aggregation that's tied to organic matter improves infiltration. It improves percolation, movement of water to deeper stores, prevents excessive runoff, lowers the bulk density, increases water holding capacity of soil, and that leads to flood protection at some level. And then soil management. You can think about the role of carbon plays in soil tilth and water dynamics for crop production or forest production or for drought that may occur. Retention of nutrients, herbicide, pesticide, absorption, and degradation. And in an agricultural setting, you can think of crop health and vigor. And then environmental protection. Again, we mentioned it is a sink of global carbon, a big portion of the carbon that's cycling in the globe. It's also got a role in water cleansing. And so this is a service that's provided by the natural systems that we need to account for and not undervalue. Waste isolation and degradation. Soils play a big role in that, particularly organic matter. And then erosion reduction, not only water erosion, but wind erosion as well. I didn't really know what to call this, but I think about ecological considerations, that carbon in soils, it's a result of vegetation, climate, all those things working together. And you can write an equation that helps you describe the content of carbon there. But there's different kinds of carbon, different kinds of soil organic matter. It's distributed unevenly in the landscape. Distributed unevenly in the profile. And then we think about the roles of organic acids in various places in the ecosystem as well. Okay, so back to promoting carbon sequestration. We know that carbon is lost through disturbance, poor management, maybe even through good management, when you disturb a system, deforestation. But then how do we encourage carbon sequestration? How do we, as a society, promote protection of these ecosystems? Because we all benefit from the services that are provided. Is it through carbon credits, some sort of payments, creating incentives, letting market forces push it? That's one potential way. Another way is education, I think, and just enumerating the various services that are provided by soils. I think this is all one of our underlying quests or goals as a group of scientists, but also making the public aware of the benefits that are derived from soil. But I think if we just look at carbon sequestration alone, for offsetting climate change, we're going to be missing some of these other services. And if we have a better accounting of all the services, I think that'll be a way of providing more complete or better incentives for carbon sequestration. Okay, so then how do we quantify soil carbon sequestration? That's a question that's out there. One thing is you need to know where you're at or where you've been and where you're going. And there's a lot of available data out there, but a lot of the national soils databases are missing the organic horizon material, so we don't get a full accounting. A lot of times the data's not for full profiles to the, I've got 5 minutes, so I better get moving. But creating maps that show you where the carbon is and also establishing places, identifying where carbon's been lost. And understand the vulnerabilities. How labile is the carbon that's out there? We did a paper a couple years ago where we looked at all the where's the carbon in the forests of the U.S. and it allowed us to create maps that look like this to show the distribution of carbon. This is to 150 centimeters in the contiguous U.S. But we can also look at the rest of the U.S. and that's where our mandate lies. So. And you can look at where it's distributed as a function of depth, either to 30 centimeters, 100 centimeters, 150, and and get the total. So this gives you a baseline. Now this data, they're not perfect. They're rough. There's ways to refine it. But we can look at where that carbon is distributed by forest type. You know that the oak hickory forest is holding most of the carbon in the soil in the U.S., in the contiguous U.S. And you look at Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. This starts identifying some of these places where the carbon is and identifying potentially places where we can work or management will have the best effects to improve carbon sequestration. I mentioned a minute ago that all carbon is created equal, and so we have to come up with some ways of describing it. A lot of times we talk about kinetic stability, but we're still debating what's the best way to describe that. Is it through, you hear terms like passive, active, and slow, recalcitrant, labile, and intermediate fractions? Is it based upon the composition or just its reactivity? And then how do we quantify that? Size fractionation, density fractionation, aggregate stability. Anyway, there's a lot of things out there. As scientists, we need to converge some of these ideas and begin using them. And another question is, once we establish a baseline, how do you monitor that? I know there's a lot of discussion about rapid techniques for assessing where we are and maybe the trajectory of carbon. What methods do we use? What scale do we work at? And finally, whose responsibility is it? Is it the NRCS? Is it the Forest Service? Is it EPA? Let's talk a moment just about giving credits. One of the things I'm a little concerned about is you get into this whole market trading where it allows me to abuse something here because I have money to pay for it elsewhere. I think we need to be smart about how we reward sequestration and encourage it. And then how do we value carbon in the soil? How much is a ton of soil carbon worth? And should the forms of labile carbon be discounted compared to recalcitrant forms? These are all kinds of questions we need to think about. And if a project is run where carbon is sequestered, how long does it need to be held for a person to get a credit? At the EPA, we're initiating a study to look at the application of ecosystem services, whole look at ecosystems for ecosystem protection in the Willamette Basin in Oregon. Actually, there's three places across the country. The one I'm working on is in Oregon. And we'll be looking at ecosystem services and means of environmental protection. And here's the five services we'll be looking at: carbon sequestration, water quality, water provision, crop production, and wildlife habitat. So what we hope to do in this pilot project is begin addressing some of these questions. And we hope to have workshops and tap many of you to contribute to the thinking and the development of this work as it gets going. I guess finally, we agree that I think that soils should be managed in a way to protect soil carbon, not just because I work at the EPA, but because I'm a citizen of the world. We need to look at ways of restoring carbon because there are so many benefits to having a healthy soil with enriched in carbon, and also looking at ways to sequester additional carbon. I think one of the ways to get at this is raising the awareness that there are many other ecosystem services provided by soil carbon than just as a measure of offsetting CO2 in the atmosphere. And finally, we really depend upon these ecosystem services as well for many things, and we actually may be at more risk if they're lost for other reasons. And how's my time, Chris? Okay. We have a lot to do. That's the to-do list. But maybe I'll just go to this. As Chris said, I think S7 is the place for this discussion to be. I mean, it's been here for a while, but now it's being raised. And I think that as a group, as a collective, we can really contribute to answering these questions and addressing the issues that are facing us.